Before we start today's episode, I just wanted to share the good news with you that I will be doing my Artist Low Comedy Summer Weekend Intensive live in person here in Chicago on the weekend of August 6th and 7th. I limit this to 10 people. People are already signing up now. If you are new to improv or if you're a seasoned improviser looking for a new approach to improv, this might be the intensive for you. For more information and to sign up, go to my website at jimmycorain.com. And if you can't see me in person, if you can't come to Chicago, I'm not going to take it personally. I'm not. I'm also teaching classes online. And I have my Artist Low Comedy Level 3 starting July 1st. It's called the Advanced Ensemble. At the end of the class, we will be putting on a long-form show on Zoom. For more information, you know where to go, but I'm going to say it anyways. Go to my website at jimmycorain.com.
Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Jimmy Corain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Corain's a nerd.
Okay, everybody in. Come on, take a seat. Come on in. We still have some room. Welcome, everybody, to another great episode of Improv Nerd. Our guest today is Rich Sohn. Rich Sohn is a master improviser and teacher. He teaches at the Pack Theater in Los Angeles. But before that, he has spent many years at I.O. Chicago, the Annoyance Theater, and studied at Second City. We talked to Rich about the Annoyance style of play, and he really broke it down for us. He gave us two great exercises that I was lucky enough to get to improvise with him, and he talked about working with McNapier and Del Close. Before we get to that episode, I just want to say something. I've had a lot of gratitude lately about doing this podcast. When I first started, you probably are aware, you probably bore you with this, but I was really just to get famous. I just thought it was me and Mark Mayer that were doing podcasts. How ridiculous was that? But it was totally true. And then I did it for a long time, and it was about it was still about fame, and then it was about how many downloads and all this crazy stuff that gets in your head when you don't feel good enough about yourself and you're looking for stuff outside to validate you. And doing this episode with Rich and really the last couple episodes, I've had a lot of gratitude because, and this is something that when it clicks in my head, it makes my life so much better. One is connecting with people, and I've you know, known Rich in Chicago for a long time, but also this fact that I can come in here and learn from these great teachers like Patty Stiles and Patrick McCartney and now Rich Sohn. So whenever I'm in that learning frame of mind, it changes everything. And so I'm really grateful as I'm slowly churning out new episodes that I'm it's helping me become a better improviser and a better teacher, and I'm not as worried about all the other bullshit in my head. So enough about me. Here it is. This is such a great episode. You're going to love what he has to say. You're going to love these exercises. And he's so articulate, so thoughtful. Just a great, great person. Here it is, the Rich Sohn episode. Enjoy.
Jimmy's a nerd. He's a nerd. Oh, yeah. Jimmy's a nerd. He's a nerd.
Rich Sohn, thank you so much for being my guest on Improv Nerd.
Thanks for having me, Jimmy.
You said you fell in love with improv in college in Florida. I would imagine this was around the 80s.
Yep.
Can you take us back when that happened?
So my dad had grown up in Chicago, and we'd lived in the Chicagoland area when I was younger. But my dad had an understanding of Second City. I didn't. But I was getting interested in comedy in college. I was finding that people liked stuff I wrote in creative classes, and I was getting asked to do comedy type things. I was thinking of trying stand up, but what I noticed about myself was that my biggest pleasure as a generator of comedy is to be in the moment, responding to something, throwing bits, riffing. So then I noticed a poster on campus, and this is way back before Photoshop. It was hand-drawn, probably Sharpie on a piece of typing paper. And it was a Second City Touring Company was coming through. And so I'd heard the name, didn't know anything about it, went to see the show. The sketches were great, but the improv is what really blew me away. The improv set they did. And just making it up in the moment by being playful and aware of each other. And that's felt like something that maybe I could do because I felt quick mentally. And I wanted to learn how to do that.
So you moved to Chicago in the late 80s, early 90s, which a lot of people consider it was the golden age of improv in Chicago. As you went and saw shows, what was your take on that period of time in Chicago?
It was amazing. There was great stuff happening everywhere. I was studying with Del while Ed happened, a seminal, brilliant improv show called Ed. Jazz Freddy happened, I think, a few years later. But there were great stuff on all the stages. Like you'd go to a Second City set, see Pasquazi in the set. You'd go to I.O. and The Family was playing, and Corky's Callback. People who had recently left would come back to sit in, like Dorf and
Evan Dorf.
Yeah, Booker, Tom Booker.
Tom Booker.
I think, what was the name of the Mitch Rouse?
You're thinking of Blue Velveeta, Mitch Rouse, Jay Leggett, Susan Messy, Brendan Sullivan,
yeah,
Blondell, and McCann.
They had split off and they were doing their own thing at an Italian restaurant in the Old Town area.
Basement of Papa Milano's, Comedy
there Underground. You go.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. That was it. That was great. I.O. was hopping. Annoyance was amazing. It was just everywhere was impressive, but so accessible.
Was it inspiring? Like I could do this, or was it intimidating? Like, oh God, I should go back to Florida.
It was both. It was both all the time.
And so how did you get over that?
I never did. truly, like I'm comfortable on stage and I'm comfortable in my powers as an improviser, but I'm still like blown away by people that have different skills than me that feel like alien to me. My wife is
Rebecca. An amazing.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, my pleasure.
She's an amazing improviser in ways that I am very much not. She has an emotional honesty and an easiness in the environment and just a freedom with her body that are a challenge for me all the time. I recognize that I have skills that other people don't have, but I always envy the skills other people have too.
And Rebecca, you guys got married and Rebecca did stuff at Annoyance. She did stuff at Second City. How did you meet?
Rebecca was living in San Francisco and I.O. was doing a thing called the Southern Comfort Comedy Contest, which involved Sharna and I think Noah Gregoropoulos.
Yeah, they were judges.
So funny that I just blew his name.
We can edit that part out. So Noah Gregoropoulos and Sharna, they would go, I think they went through all these cities and they would do this comedy competition.
Right. So they'd go to San Francisco. Rebecca performs on a team there in Bay Area Theater Sports where she's studying. Sharna invites her afterwards to come back to Chicago to study with Del. Rebecca agrees, thinking she's going to come to Chicago for a couple of weeks and then go back to San Francisco. Sharna is trying to promote I.O., then called Improv Olympia, by postering in neighborhoods. She thinks that Rebecca and I would make a nice match. So she asks me to go postering while she asks Rebecca to go postering, and she pairs us to go walk around together and poster. So she was trying to set us up, and Rebecca ended up staying. Sharna put us on a team together and was just constantly trying to make sure we were together. And we became friends. I had actually been dating someone else at the time, but eventually we became more than friends. And so Sharna is kind of responsible for us.
And you've been in groups with Rebecca. What's good things to be conscious of when you're in a group with somebody that you're married to or even dating?
There are still boundaries. I think that's a lesson I had to learn that Rebecca did. Like, I felt like, oh, a bonus of us being in this improv scene together is I can grope you or something in a way that I couldn't, someone I wasn't married to. But just because we have that permission in our personal lives doesn't mean Rebecca, the performer, has given me that permission. So that wasn't like a stretch of time. That was one conversation, but that's a lesson I had to learn. Also, just to be truthful, but kind with each other. Like, don't tell your partner they had a good show if they're feeling bad about their show because they had a shitty show. But, you know, be supportive and say things that were good, or just let them feel bad if that's what they need to do.
And how do you, because so many groups now are self-directed or without a coach, or people that listen to this podcast might not have access to a coach.
Yeah.
What is the best way? Because I've always found notes afterwards to be very helpful for me. What is the best way if you don't have a coach and it's just your team or your group that you're relying on?
I think you have to develop a deliberate practice. So that it might be something like, we're going to talk about the show after the show. If that's the understanding, then an understanding within that understanding might be that I'm not going to give you a note without asking if you want the note. So I have to say, Jimmy, I have a note. Do you want to hear it? And if you say no, I have to be okay with that. But, it's rare that I would hope one player has a note for another player. Mostly, I think the most constructive notes are about how we played as a team. We could have been better on the edits. We could have been listening better. Those are the things you can work on as a team in your next rehearsal. Rehearsal is about how you play as a team more than it is individual skills. At its most useful, in my opinion.
So you were lucky when you were in Chicago to study with both Mick Napier and Del Close. What are the things that you got from those guys?
So Del was, I had Del before Mick, before I had Mick. I also had Martin DeMott, who was another like very
great teacher.
Great teacher. I think the thing I got from Del, I came to Del after studying at Second City, and Second City had been great. I'd had great teachers there and less than great teachers there. But I personally came out a little confused about some things. And one of the things was the notion of being in the moment and not in your head. Those were big phrases at the time. Don't be in your head. Be in the moment, not in your head. So somehow I had, not because of studying at Second City, but while studying at Second City, come away with the notion that that meant my characters can't be smarter than the moment. They can't have intuition or forethought. I mean, it's one thing to not know, like drive to an agenda, but to be dumber than the character necessarily would be is not optimal either. What Del told me is, he took me aside after a scene and said, why didn't you make this choice? I said something like, well, I didn't think the character would know that in the moment. And it was, and he said, who said you can't use your brain? Like he gave me permission to be smart in a scene. And I was limiting myself under this idea of not being in my head. I don't think I was taught that, but I wasn't untaught that at Second City. Del said, not only can you use your brain, it's your duty to use your brain. You should be smart. You should use all your smart all the time, even when you're being dumb. Mick, the ethic of the annoyance is you can do anything, anything, as long as you approach it with integrity and do the work. And the improvisation at the annoyance is like, it is supportive, but it's also bold. It's non-judgmental in a way that from my experience, other theaters talk about support and non-judgment, but don't necessarily walk it as well as the annoyance does. There was more invitation at the annoyance to be responsible for what you taught than there was at IO as I understood it. At IO, I think, had a curriculum you had to teach to. Second City definitely had a curriculum that you were expected to work from. At the annoyance, you could teach what you wanted as long as it was, you know, useful. You never had to say anything in a class you didn't 100% believe.
Well, tell me what, if I'm going to take a Rich Soane class at the Pack Theater, what are the things that I'm going to learn from you?
What I hope you learn is to be brave, to be bold, to take chances, to be playful, and to be open. And that you cannot support and yes and your partner until you've supported and yes anding and yes anded yourself. So I'm hopefully going to empower you to trust yourself and empower you to be open to whatever happens.
And what exercises are you going to run me through to get me to that point? Do you have one specifically?
To get you to
where that I'll be bold and I'll be brave and I'll be playful.
I don't teach this anymore, but I used to invite students to think about assholes they know, specific assholes in their life, and to play characters that were only assholes. So I do a bunch of short scenes in which people are playing assholes. And what I find in that exercise when I used to do it was that the performers would be making bolder choices and they would quickly come to a point of view that they would not drop. So there were a lot of combative scenes, not always. Sometimes assholes agree with each other. Hello, Senate. But people were less likely to give up their point of view out of some improviser politeness than they would if I just let them create scenes from nothing.
So is the exercise two people just are assholes to each other?
Not to each other. They are characters who are assholes.
And what's the difference?
A misogynist is an asshole, but if he's talking to another misogynist, they're being assholes together. They're not being assholes to each other. Somebody really vapid is in my opinion, an asshole, but they're not necessarily inflicting their vapidity on the other person. They're just being that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And in this exercise, then they're not necessarily yelling at each other or being in their face.
No. It's funny. It's just about I don't want to watch any even, you know, improvisation that is all characters who are assholes. It's not about that. It's about people getting a little out of their way. Do you know what I mean? I get the first invitation for someone to be an asshole. What I will typically see is a character come out into the space and make fun of the other improviser's shirt. Because that's the level of like horror that we are comfortable putting out there. And that's as mean as they're willing to be. And that's great. I think that I'm not looking for the actual improviser to be an asshole. I'm looking for them to play a character that's an asshole. But I think that one of the things that sometimes is in the way of improvisers being as powerful as they can be is a warm-hearted, good-hearted misapplication of kindness. By which I mean, if you and I start a scene, Jimmy, and I come out and I think I'm one thing, like a cop, let's say I'm a cop, and you say something different, like you say, "Hi, dear."
Hi, dear.
I might drop cop because I think, oh, he wants to have a domestic relationship. Even though I've been a cop and the way I've moved and I'm feeling cop and I have created cop vibe, you said, "Hi, dear." And I feel like as an improviser, it's my job to support you. I think that 90% of the improvisers that come into a class would say, "Hi, dear, how was your day?" They would drop the copness and just be in a domestic relationship with you.
Okay, so let's take that. Let's take that idea. You're a cop. I'm going to come in. I'm going to see what we can do here. We'll be in a domestic partnership and see what happens. Hi, dear.
This is not the time.
Oh, well, I thought we were going to go to a movie tonight.
We were going to go to a movie, dear. You look lovely, by the way, but I'm responding to a call.
Oh, but it's Saturday. It's date night.
I know it's date night. Can you please stand up and put your hands against the wall?
What did I do? You've never talked to me like this before.
This is me at work, okay?
I thought you said it was okay to stop by.
Honey, put your hands against the wall, please.
What did I do?
What do you think you did?
Just want to lose your gun. What's that?
How long have you had a gun?
I've had a gun since we were engaged.
All right. Well, this is disturbing on a professional and a personal level. Why would you never tell me? Never mind. We'll talk about this at home. Where did you park? Where did you park the car, honey?
I parked it in the lot.
Did you notice that it was on someone?
No.
Didn't you notice the mayor yelling?
I didn't think he was yelling at me.
Honey, you parked on the mayor and I'm afraid that you're going to go away for it.
You wouldn't do that to me. I'm your wife.
I will visit you, but it's my job. Do you want me to lose my job?
No. I don't want you to lose your job.
Put your hands behind your back.
What about my gun?
You'll get that back after if you have a permit. Do you have a permit?
I didn't think I had a permit. I'm married to you. I'm married to a cop.
I'm a cop. I'm not a permit. All right.
Scene. Okay. That was a lot of fun. So
I feel so rusty.
Do you?
Oh, for sure.
It's been a lot of years. I thought it was a lot of fun. So you did not give up your character, your point of view. It would be, I think, in annoyance terms, that would be your declaration, right? You made a strong declaration there,
right,
in terms of your character choice. And then eventually it works. Because you don't give up, it works. The relationship finds common ground and an agreement to keep it going forward. Is that?
Yeah, the idea is that out of an abundance of politeness, a lot of improv scenes start in a nebulous place of no choices. And it's more interesting if we've both made a choice and that we are open from that choice. So that you've chosen that you're married to me and I've chosen that of a cop. Let's make both of those things true and see how they intersect and work together. I remember a scene where someone initiated taking a shower at the same time as someone initiated being in a bowling alley. And so what developed in the scene was there is a space where there is a shower with a bowling alley that goes through it. And it wasn't about that. It was just a true aspect of the scene that happened between two people who were roommates. And it was brilliant because it was something that would never happen in any other context. You don't write that as a sketch. It just comes out of this moment of rabid agreement and respect for each other's ideas and not calling it out as weird.
So I experienced improvising with you by you holding on to it. You actually made my job easier. And, you know, it just seemed to, we were making discoveries.
And you're making my job easier too, because you're giving dimension to my character. Cause I have to service the domestic part and feel bad about it and still do my duty.
Which gave you a great strong point of view. And then I got my point of view. I don't usually come in with strong points of view, and it's something that I wish I could. Do you have an exercise to help coming out with a stronger point of view? Right from the get-go?
I think that just inviting it can be useful. I've done a couple of exercises. One I've done is where I invite people to start a scene. They get like 2 to 3 beats into it. I stop the scene. So they're in their third line of dialogue each, maybe. I find that at that point, the scene has sort of found itself a little bit. Their points of view are a little more declared. What they're saying is a little more invested. So then I invite them to start the scene over from that line with that intensity, to just see that beginning part was really just kind of this nebulous tap dance and negotiation that really didn't arrive at the best starting place. I think it's an annoyance idea. It's a Mick idea that the top of a scene is super important. The first few seconds of the scene are important. And I think that if we imbue them with power and choice, we are putting ourselves in a better position to succeed. Rebecca has this quote. She says that the first few seconds of a scene are a promise we make the audience. And I think that's such a great idea, that what you do at the top of scene is a promise you make the audience, because the audience wants to know that you are okay, that you are not floundering and not in danger, that you are strong and competent. And so to create that promise in a really powerful, deliberate way is a gift you give the audience.
Okay, so let's take that exercise. I'm the student, you're the teacher, but we'll improvise the first three lines. And then you stop me and then you basically tell me what you would do if I was in one of your classes. Let's take, let's be in a car. We're in a car together. Okay.
My phone is not working for GPS. Do you know where we're going?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
We're going to Rand's house. He said we got to be there by 8.
Okay, I know that we are going to Rand's house. When I asked you, do you know where we're going? I meant, do you know where Rand's house is?
I don't. You've just been kind of spacey the last couple of days. I don't know if it's... Yeah.
I've been spacey.
Yeah. Well, ever since you take that new medication, it's supposed to make your blood thin or whatever, but it's, you just been very forgetful.
Scene. Okay. So start it over on, let's start it on your last line or the line before it, whichever you want.
Which line are you talking about? The
you've been spacey or ever great, since you've been that mess. And you don't have to hit it exactly. Just
okay, great. Okay. You've been spacey lately.
I've been spacey?
Yeah, you've ever since you just on that blood thinner, you're just forgetting things all the time.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that me trying to stay alive is inconveniencing you with perhaps me not remembering where Rand lives.
I'm just glad you're here and you agreed to drive last week.
Are you glad I'm here? Because it sounds like I'm annoying.
I'm glad you're here. Yes, I am. Okay. Just could you start the car?
I don't remember how cars work.
Oh my God.
What?
That's what I'm talking about.
It's a known side effect of the drug. Do you want me to stop taking the drug? I could just go ahead and risk my heart health if that'll make it easier for you.
No, I don't have many friends left. If you die, it's fine. Just why don't we switch and I'll drive?
All right, fine.
Where are the keys?
The keys.
Yeah.
I am the key keeper.
It's your car.
I knew that. The keys are probably where keys would be. Where would your keys be if it was your car?
My smart keys guy. Would be in my pocket.
That's where mine are probably. Check.
I'm not checking. Right. You check.
Here you go. They're right in my pocket.
This is your
like house. A normal boy.
This is your house key.
Oh, you want a different key?
Why are you taking your keys off the chain anyways?
Weight distribution. I like a little bit in each pocket. I don't know.
Scene. Okay, great. So that was really fun. And what I got from that was that the thing when I was like, oh, you're very forgetful. That seemed to be a gift and a point of view that you could then play through the scene, which you did.
Absolutely. It's also the gift I give myself is that I'm at a point where whatever I started with, and I don't recall what I started with, I've arrived at defensiveness. And that's a strong, easy thing to play and heighten.
Mm-hmm.
And you helped me with discovering what an idiot I am.
Right. And I always go to playing frustrated and whatever. So it was a lot of fun. So I know you're primarily doing a lot of teaching now. Mm-hmm. And you've been doing it for a long time. What do you get out of teaching that you don't necessarily get out of improvising?
I get, it's a way to look at it a little more analytically. Like I don't tend to be at this point as a performer, I'm not as analytical about what I'm doing on stage necessarily. But watching people perform, I'm able to think about it in a little more of an analytic way. And I'm empowered by working with groups of people and it's joyful to help them have more fun and joy in their lives. I think that improv is a gift and I really like, I'm an atheist and a horrible person in so many ways, but I feel like when I put on the mindset of an improviser, I'm my best self. I remember walking to the PAC a couple of years ago when we had never heard the word COVID. I was walking through Hollywood, which can get sketchy. And my mindset was everything is a threat. Like I heard a noise and I responded defensively to it. Somebody approached me, I brace for a confrontation. That's just the kind of neighborhood that it is in. And then I get to the stage and I get to do a show with Neil Dandati, who is the most like yes and man possible. And I just get to be open and let all of those defenses down and just treat everything as a gift. And it's such a release and pleasure. And I love bringing that to other people. I like watching people have breakthroughs and find their power.
We end the podcast the same way every time. And that is to ask the question, what's one piece of advice you'd give an improviser starting out today?
Say yes to things. That's not just an onstage advice. It's like offstage, whatever opportunities come your way. If there's fear around them, lean into them. Take every opportunity and read a lot, see a lot, fill your brain with things, and take an acting class. Those three things are the one thing I would tell an improviser.
Thank you, Rich, for your 3-in-1. That's a bonus if you're a regular listener. Thank you so much, Rich Assone, for being our guest on Improv Nerd.
Thanks, Jimmy.
And there you have it, another great episode of Improv Nerd. I want to thank our guest, Rich Assone, from the PAC Theater, and check out all their classes and stuff if you're out there in LA. And I believe they have stuff online. Rich is just a tremendous teacher and a great improviser as well. I want to thank my producer, Dan Schiffmacher. If it wasn't for him, you wouldn't be hearing my voice right now. He makes me sound so slick and sound so professional. Also, if you want to like us on our Improv Nerd Facebook page, please do that because it really helps with my low self-esteem. We're also on Instagram @JimmyCarane. We're also on Twitter, improv_nerd. And we have a Patreon page, so you can go to that as well. Something I'd really like to ask you, if you've listened this far into the episode and you haven't tuned us off, is if you like what we're doing here, I'd really appreciate it if you could go to Apple and give us a really nice review. That would save me a lot of money in therapy if you could do that. So, and of course, I want to thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.